All right. Hey, welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. July 22nd, 2026. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. Hope it's great wherever you were at. We had a shitload of rain last night. Oh, my goodness. We've had like some interesting weather. Tornado watches, tornado warnings. Very interesting weather. I think we were under a tornado watch last night, man. And the storm came rolling through, thunder and lightning and rain. My God, it was crazy. I mean, I love it. I love that stuff, but boy, it was pouring. And wasn't sure what I was going to wake up to this morning. Got up. Beautiful. Beautiful. We've been deficient, so I'm sure the rain was welcomed. And yeah, it definitely gave it a dose last night. It was pouring. So, but everything is good. Woke up this morning feeling great. Had a, I've had an interesting few days. I think I shared in the podcast the other day. I was lucky enough, right, to get a new car, but it has been a terrible experience. And I'm trying to not make it a terrible experience. I'm trying to look at it from both sides, and it does help. I can remember situations like this in the past, and I'd be such a victim, right? I'd be so, you know, so unlucky, poor me. And the and it doesn't have to be that way. The situation, what happened is I got this car. You know, I lease cars, and I've shared that. It was time for a new car, so I went over to the dealership, took it, and I'll just say right now, I personally hate buying cars. I'm sure many people do, because it is so stressful. And because you just don't know what you just don't know, you know, I don't care. I mean, unless you're in the business, you just don't know what's going on, really. Or I shouldn't say that. I don't know what's going on. So, but I've done it a few times. I feel like I know the ins and outs. And this time I had a car salesman who was new. They're all new because nobody wants to stay in that job. I'm sure there are a few, but it seems to be a lot of turnover in that business. So, I got this new salesman, and man, he was just really bad at it. And, you know, I guess I understand. The part that I sort of have to look at is he reminds me a lot of myself. And that's always tough, right? Because he was just, he forgot everything. We finally got the car. I'm signing the papers. I'm looking at it. This isn't even the right color of the car. The guy's like, oh, geez. So we had to redo it. Of course, he made the mistake. And then, of course, I got the car, and it was broken by the time I got home on Friday. Had to take it back on Saturday. And, you know, finally, after all this rigmarole, they called me and said, you know, that car's bad. We're going to give you a new car. And I was like, great. That's what I was hoping for, because I didn't want them to try to fix a bad car. And, you know, side note, I think this car was always broken. I think when I got the car, when I drove it home, you know, you have these profiles, you know, on this, I don't know, on this car, you have a couple of profiles. And so I went to go to put my profile in, and there was already a Nicole in the profile. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And so I asked the guy, I'm like, what is this Nicole profile? And he goes, oh, that was the driver bringing it down from the other dealership. And I was like, oh. But I thought about it. I'm like, why would a person do that? Why would a driver drive a car down from another dealership and put their name into the profile? It just didn't make any sense. I think this car has always been broken. And I think they tried to, you know, pawn it off on me, which, and you know, of course, that's annoying. Fast forward, anyway, they decide that car is busted, and they're going to give me a new car, which is great. And the guy's like, when can you come and get it? I go, I'm not coming to get this car. You can bring me the car. I've driven up there, you know, three times now. So the guy's like, yeah, okay. Well, he's like, I don't know, let me talk to my manager. So then he calls me back. He says, I'll bring you the car in the morning. And that was, I guess, yesterday. And so he shows up with this car. He's like, I'm going to get it detailed, and I'll get it all cleaned up, and I'll bring it to you. He brings me the car. It's not detailed. It's dirty. It has stickers on it. You know, when you get a new car, you know, the cars are covered in plastic and different things, and there was still plastic, and it was mediocre, right? And you know, I'm a little, you know, I. So this is a great opportunity for me to be annoyed. And I'm really trying not to be, you know, I'm very grateful that I can even get a car. I know there's people that can't. You know, one of the things about not drinking and drugging is there's a lot of opportunities. You know, you get a job, you make decent money. Hopefully you manage yourself. I try to manage ourselves, my money, our money. And, you know, I budgeted for a car. And so I'm very grateful for that. But this has just been one of those opportunities that has really tried to drag me into the gutter. Played that before, but that's a great song. I need a little Pearl Jam in my day today. But yeah, man, it's been an interesting time, and it has given me this almost green light to be a jackass. And it flared up the other day because you know, he said, "What time can you come up and pick it up?" And I finally was like, "You know what, man, you bring me the car." And he's like, "Oh, I know it's an inconvenience." I go, "Do you? Right? Do you?" And I started to get a little out of my lane a bit, and I checked myself, and my son was with me, and I didn't want to be that way. I don't want to be that way, but I definitely don't want to be that way in front of him. So I had to reel it in a bit, and I got the car, right? And it's got a lot of, there's no issues with the car, but there's like a lot of little weird issues with the car. And I got up this morning, and I'm like, I'm gonna get this thing washed. And so I took it to get it washed, and I cleaned it up. It looks better. I was supposed to, because, you know, the final nail in the coffin was that all of the stuff that was in the original car, my original license plate, which is on the old car, you know, everything that I use, you know, I have a thing that sort of mounts in the dashboard that holds your phone, and all that stuff is still in the car, and he didn't bring any of it. And so I text him, I go, "Where's my license plate?" "Oh, I forgot to bring it up." And I'm like, Jesus. So I told him I'd drive up today, but I don't want to drive up there. So I'll probably just wait till Saturday, go visit my dad and run by there and grab the stuff. But man, it's just been, you know, I've been a little bit off the beam on the whole situation. I think initially starting the process of buying a car, or getting a new car, you know, this lease was ending. I was over my miles. Many mistakes I've made. Right? Too much driving. It's not really a mistake. It's just life. But due to life, I've driven too many miles. And so I was already out of my contract. And so it was, the whole thing was uneasy. And it just sort of has ended up being this. And so I thought I would talk about it. I wanted to read this As Bill Sees It reading. And it says, And this is pretty good. 151, Start by Forgiving. Huh. And I will say, I did look through this book. Usually if I do this as Bill sees it, I just sort of flip to something and read it. But I sort of read, was looking at a few, and this sort of, I don't know, it seemed important. I went to a meeting, you know, on Monday, and I don't know. But here it is. It says, start by forgiving. Ooh. The moment we ponder a twisted or broken relationship with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. To escape looking at the wrongs we have done another, we resentfully focus on the wrongs we have done us. Triumphantly, we seize upon his slightest misbehavior as the perfect excuse for minimizing or forgetting our own. Right here, we need to fetch ourselves up sharply. Let's remember that alcoholics are not the only ones bedeviled by sick emotions. In many instances, we are really dealing with fellow sufferers, people whose woes we have increased. If we are about to ask forgiveness for ourselves, why shouldn't we start by forgiving them, one and all? I will say, when he dropped off the car yesterday, I told him, I said, I hope I wasn't too dicky. He said, no, man, you're fine. And I remember my life like that. You know, I was always forgetting. You couldn't rely on me. I had 100 excuses. It was never my fault. And so, you know, I was always in those kind of situations, either asking for forgiveness or being forgiven. And probably not, like, you know, truly forgiven, just the lip service of saying it. But it reminded me of myself. And so, of course, that's a great reading because, you know, one of the biggest problems that I had and still have, right? I'm a lot better. I'm a lot better. But I had zero accountability, right? I had no responsibility. I didn't take anything very serious. I wasn't very efficient in the things that I did. And it showed. And I, you know, I remember even like, and I won't blame alcohol, but I will blame the fact that these are young people issues. You know, I see these kind of things in my children. And as a child, and then going right into alcohol and drugs, I never had that chance to mature, if I was going to at all, I don't know. But, you know, mature, grow up, start to recognize these things, make that natural shift in life from self to humble. It just didn't happen. And so I grew up a big portion of my life constantly a victim, always having bad luck, never my fault. Who put this sign here, right? And I remember having a conversation recently with a lady at a meeting, and I think I talked about it, but she had been in a relationship and she was having a lot of trouble. I wasn't, you know, we were just chatting, you know, before the meeting. And, you know, a lot of his fault that, you know, he's done this. And I said, you know, you might have to take a look at yourself. Ugh. Nobody wants to hear that. And I only say that because I've gone through so many situations, whether it's relationships, friendships, broken friendships, relationships with people who I thought were friends were who really just casualties of war. Right? I always talk about the guy in California who punched me. And I was a victim to that for many years until I finally realized that had I not gone over there, I would have never gotten in this situation, right? Had I not walked in his house unannounced, I maybe wouldn't have gotten punched in the face. And so in turn, it turns out that whole situation was my fault. And it was so relieving to say it, and I shared it was with my father, and I said it to him, and I told this was something we always talked about. It was always this, you know, thing. And I said, you know, Dad, I think this might have been my fault. He was like, what? And after that, we didn't talk about it anymore. And that's what I was telling her. I said, listen, and I can only say this from relationships of my past. You know, I've had some bad relationships, but I've also been involved in it. I've also played a role in the relationship. And I, especially back in those days, and especially even in early recovery, right? Because, you know, I got married, I think two years into being sober. Relationship should have never happened. Marriage should have never happened. I mean, I'm not mad about it because we've both gone our own ways and we have a great son out of it and everything seems to be sort of normal, thank God. But, you know, all of that, I should have never even been involved. I should have had accountability, but I didn't. And so, of course, when that marriage was over, it was, you know, this, she's, you know, she's this and she's that. And it was all my fault. It's hard to move on unless I can take some accountability for my part. And that was my message to that lady, was like, you might even have to apologize to the guy. She's like, apologize to him? I'm like, yeah, you might have to. And then I talked to her a couple of weeks later, and she's like, you know, that was spot on. You're right. You know, even though the relationship that I had been in the past had gone bad and didn't go my way, and everything seemed like it was everybody else's fault until I sat down to take a hard look at it. You know, that first marriage, I'll never forget, my buddy Matt said he took this girl hostage. And I was like, oh my God, that's like SWAT or something. But after he explained it, you know, we take people emotionally hostage, you know. We let them believe that things are a certain way and we exist in that relationship knowing the whole time it's not that way. I don't care about this person like I thought I did. I'm just doing it to feel better. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I took my first wife hostage. I was brokenhearted and I wanted to feel better. And she even said that. I know this is a rebound. Oh, no, it's not. It was. And I had to make an amends for it. And I won't say, I don't know, I feel like that's been a sort of part of my whole life. I don't know if I've ever, I mean, luckily my wife and I today, we have a great relationship, but we treat it like a business. You know, we're raising kids, managing a house, managing money like the rest of us, trying to hang on. I don't know. But, you know, it did seem, and to my friend who I was talking to, it did seem the idea of making amends to this, apparently her ex, who was so bad to her, would seem completely off the table. But once she thought about it, she said, you know, you're right. And I've always thought, you know, if my feet were there, I played some role. And so I try to reflect back onto this whole buying this car. And, you know, I have... And, oh, I've always heard, you don't want to get a lease. Everybody goes out of their miles. And I tell you, I've had a lease. I've leased cars for 20 years. And I've always done well. I've always, not well as far as financially, but I've always done well as far as staying into the contract, which is the miles. I've always turned in the car with equity. I've always done well. And this time I did not. And I should have never bought that car. It was a level of car that is not really in my wheelhouse, but I got caught up with the pride and the ego, and I said yes. And it was one of those deals that was too good to be true. My payment was low, and I think that they had worked the numbers, so they built the heaviness of the contract in the end. And so when it came time to trade that car in, it was underwater. It was behind. I think the value of the car was 30, and I owed 34, so it was 30. It was $4,000 underwater, and I knew this. I knew. I'm like, I love the car. I shouldn't be driving this. It's not even who I am. It's not like it's a Porsche or something. It was a Grand Cherokee, but it was another level, right? It had massagers in the seats. It had, you know, cool. It was, you know, it was pretty fancy. Not the guy that I am. And so always knowing that, having to come up to this situation where we had to, you know, start getting honest about what was owed, what I could afford. And when the reality struck that I was not going to be able to, because I did have an idea that maybe I could get another one of these cars. And once the numbers came back, it was the reality. It was, I could not afford it. And that always sucks. You never want to hear that you can't afford something. So that obviously, you know, ruffled the feathers a little. And I will say one of the problems, the issues that I did have with that car was that I was concerned because I had considered buying out the lease. And I was like, you know, it is a little fancy. What's going to break? Right? The nice thing about the new car is that it isn't as fancy and there's less things to break, which I do appreciate, which was something I was hoping for in the whole time, but still getting caught up in the fanciness of the other car. So... But yeah, the reality came along. I can't afford it. This is what you can afford. And not only it's what you can afford, but you're actually going to pay more than what you were paying for less of a car. So all of this, right, it's all, you know, making this fucking soup of unhappiness and frustration. And then, of course, coming to the time where you have to sign, and then the process which I've just shared about. And it's really given me the green light to be an asshole. And like I've said before, it's, you know, I've tried very hard to work on the things that come out of my mouth. I'm trying to work really hard on the things that don't come out of my mouth, like these thoughts that I shouldn't even have. But I think it's just being human, right? It's just being a human. I think everybody gets frustrated. But fast forward, you know, I got the car. I'm happy. Everything's gone. It's fine. But I needed, you know, I need to share about it. It has been, you know, I have to be accountable for everything that I do today. And it wasn't always like that. And I think it's hard, even when I got sober in recovery, to really start to understand that, because, you know, for me, I got sober and I can look back at it now because it's been many years, but just the idea of not drinking was a lot for me. It was a big deal. And we're doing that for a while. And, you know, then it gave me the green light to be sort of a better person, you know, 50% better. I'm like, look at me, I'm taking shopping carts back. I'm awesome. Well, that is awesome. We should have done that, right? It's a lot of work to be normal. But then we just start ending up into situations that don't involve drinking, that don't involve drugging, but still involve not being honest, not being accountable. You know, I think about that, the job I took when I first got sober on the golf course, and being so inspired by my boss and the power that he had, right? Because he could come out and tell us what to do, and then go back in his office and watch the Weather Channel and hang out and, you know, calculate things. And I'm like, that's a great job. So eventually going to school for it and then becoming a assistant superintendent and being terrible at it because I didn't really want the job. I really didn't want to do any of the work that it required to have the job. I just wanted the power. I just wanted to not have to work as hard. And so eventually, you know, quitting that job. I mean, I did, you know, listen, I was fine. I did it. I could have been much better. And then eventually just walking away from the whole business and, you know, eventually being a hairdresser. But, you know, if I'm going to be honest, I should have never done it. You know, I should have followed the directions given by my sponsor, which is don't do anything crazy in the first year. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do anything crazy. Like go to college for a career you're not even sure you want because you don't even know who you are and you don't know what the motivation is behind trying to get this career. And then to find myself 4 years later, miserable. You know, things that I like, things that I'm interested in, I research. I look into, I study, I learn all that I can. I want to be the best at it because it's stuff that I like. But things that I don't like, things that I'm not interested in, I do it mediocre. And that's sort of how I felt by this whole experience with the car guy. He's not a car salesman, right? I chatted with him. We, you know, of course, one of the things about buying a car is you end up talking to the car salesman for an hour. He's a young guy. He's got a new baby. And you can tell he's not, nobody wants to be a car salesman. I mean, there's probably somebody that does, and they're probably good at it. But most people that are in there, they don't want to be a car salesman. And you could just tell, you know, he did not dot all the I's and cross all the T's. But, you know, the good thing is he's a young guy. I don't know if he's an alcoholic. I doubt it. Maybe. Who knows? But like I said the other day, you know, what is a weed? Any plant deemed undesirable. And the big weed I had in my life was obviously the alcohol. The biggest weed was the drinking and driving. I pulled that weed right away. I got the root and all of it. But there's other weeds that pop up that aren't as undesirable because I don't realize that they're undesirable yet. Because that big weed is like such a glorious pull, right? I got it. But there's other weeds, and I can chop them down. I can knock them over. But until I get the root, you know, they're going to pop up and show themselves again. And I don't always know when, I don't always know where, but they will. And so I got to be, you know, pay attention. But that's what's been going on. I'm going to go, I am not going to go get the car. I'm actually going to go for a run. You know, one of the interesting things for me right now in my life is as I get older, I wake up really not very excited. I mean, I'm grateful I woke up, but I'm like, you know, last night I'm like, I'm going to get up tomorrow. I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to enjoy my day. And I woke up this morning and I'm like, I am not running. So I had some coffee and I sat in my office and, you know, was just kind of hanging out and coming to almost. And then I decided, well, let me go get this car washed. Once I got the car washed, came home, talked to my daughter and wife. And then I feel like, all right, now I feel better. So now I was like, well, let me do a podcast and then I'm going to go for a run. One of the other things I was reading, but, you know, just give it a second, right? Give my day a second. Give, you know, this too shall pass, right? Just let's see what's going on. Let's not base our whole day on how I feel at 7 a.m. And, yeah, I'm grateful for that. All right, let's see. Let me read the daily reflections, and then I'm going to go for a run. And then a meeting. All right, the good and the bad. July 22nd, the good and the bad. My creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 76. The joy of life is in the giving, being freed of my shortcomings, that I may more freely be of service, allows humility to grow in me. My shortcomings can be humbly placed in God's loving care and be removed. The essence of step 7 is humility. And what better way to seek humility by giving all of myself, good and bad, to God so that he may remove the bad and return me to the good. Yeah. It is funny how my character defects and shortcomings can keep me out of a lot of stuff. Yeah, that's maybe for a whole another podcast. But anyway, I hope everyone has a great day, and I will catch you later. Bye-bye.